This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome to the Punk Rock NBA Podcast.
What's up, everybody? I'm Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock NBA Podcast. Today's guest is Connie from CU Space Cowboy. You may know them as one of the, one of the bands I mentioned as part of a quote-unquote scene revival sometime last year, I think. I was kind of joking, but kind of not, and actually it's kind of true. If you miss the days of bands like Alisana and Norma Jean, and the number 12 looks like you, then you are probably going to like this band. CU Space Cowboy's roots are very much in like the DIY hardcore and punk scene, so I think they have a little bit of a different perspective on this that's pretty cool. So we talk about that, kind of where they're coming from creatively, how they fit into the larger scene in general. Also talk about Connie's artwork, because she's actually a pretty talented illustrator, and get into kind of that side of her. And touch on something that I've been wanting to get into for a while, trans issues in the metal and hardcore scene. As you may or may not know, Connie is trans, so we talk about that a little bit. I think it's a pretty cool discussion that a lot of you are going to appreciate. Before we get into it though, I wanted to mention a couple ways that you can support the channel if you would like to. Number one, we do have merch. There's a link to that in the show notes. Number two, you can choose to support us on Patreon if you really, really like us. Also, it really helps a lot if you share the show on social media. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Friendster, TikTok. We don't care. It all helps. I also wanted to mention my social media coaching program. So if you are one of these two kinds of people, then my program could be for you. Number one, if you want to be a creator of some kind and turn that into either your full-time job or a serious side hustle that makes you a decent amount of money. So if you are a YouTuber, a photographer, a podcaster, anything like that, and you want to turn that into your full-time job, then I can probably help you do that. Second kind of person that it's a fit for is anybody that wants to grow their personal brand as a way of growing their business. So if you're the founder or CEO of some company, or if you're a professional like an attorney or something like that, and you want to grow your personal brand as a way of growing your business, then I can definitely help you with that as well. So if you are interested in talking more about that, just send me a note. There's a link to that in the show notes. And with that out of the way, let's get into the episode. Connie, thank you so much for joining the podcast. You are reporting from sunny San Diego.
Yep. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's a slightly cloudy San Diego right now, but yes, normally sunny San Diego.
Well, it's rainy Seattle today, but you're not originally from San Diego, right?
No, I am.
Oh, you are. Okay. But you lived up north for a while.
When I graduated from high school, I did the stereotypical lost soul bounce to San Francisco and Oakland for a majority of my adult life.
Got it. Okay. Well, I guess the first thing I wanted to kind of ask you about it, we talked about this a little bit, but I mean, that was maybe a year ago or something like that. And I feel like since then, it's only become more true. Your band, it's not like a revival band or anything like that, but obviously you're pulling from a specific kind of time and place and updating that. And at the time, there weren't that many people doing that. And it was kind of different and really stood out. And now it has become way more popular. Can you talk a little bit about kind of where that, like what drew you to that era and your thoughts on it becoming more popular now?
For me, what really drew me to the era was the fun aspect of it. I've been like playing a lot of like just really serious screamo bands for like most of my like musical career, I guess. And when it came time to do this band, originally I wanted to do like a dark hardcore band, dark melodic hardcore band. And I formed the people together, and then we talked about it, and it kind of like shifted from like, you know what, it'd be maybe a bit more fun to like take from like these other eras. Cause like it started out going from like just dark melodic hardcore to like, well, let's have breakdowns. Like Me and Him Call Us was a huge one. And then it kind of went to, I had played around with sassing and others in my screamo band before this. And I'm like, you know what, let's bring it back full force, like Full Blood Brothers, Dropped It Gorgeous. And like, it got ridiculous to even like taking influence from I Set My Friends on Fire. And it kind of just grew into this thing of like, just let's do this like zany art punky thing like 31G was doing back in the day. Mm-hmm. And we'll like do this. And then it kind of just grew from there. And like taking from like Daughters and shit. The thing with like it being popular now, to me, that's kind of funny is we never meant for it to like be like a revival. You know, when you like first, like you were like one of the first ones to be like, it's scene revival time. And I'm like, is it? Because like there had been bands that were doing like sass and like metalcore shit before us, like Gift From God and the Cambodian Heat, and like never really got traction. And then it was kind of just like weird to me that like us and Risking Razor started this like around the same time, and it just became this like thing, and then it's like kind of like splintered off and like all this shit. It's like, it's cool to me because I love this sound. I love hearing it again, but it's also like a little, just like, oh, like this is like kind of like, it was fun being like the outcast, and now it's kind of just like there's a label attached to it and shit, and like a movement, which mm-hmm. I'm not a huge fan of that aspect of it, because like I want people to like work on like taking things from the old and like twisting them and making them into something new, and not having it be just like categorized as like, oh, it's like bringing back a sound, like that's like the end all be all of that.
I can't really quite put my finger on it. Maybe it's just that you're self-aware, I don't know, but there are other people that just do kind of sound like a revival, and I think what you're doing does bring something new to the table, and that's why it's so much more interesting to me.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, that's kind of always been my thing with doing music, is every time I start a band, I of course take influence. I always do. You have to have like a starting point. I don't really think you could invent a new sound in 2020 at this point, but to take like that tinge of like nostalgia or sound you like and put your own spin on it, because I don't really, it's not that I don't think there's any value at all, but I don't see much value in making art that's just completely derivative of something that's existed before. You have to add something new to the table. It's like taking something without like putting something in its place, to be like, I've taken this thing, but I'm going to give you something better now. I'm giving you something new, a reinvention of like what was happening. Like, you know, thank you, pass it on. That's like how art progresses.
So what is it that you would say, like if you were to nail it down to like one or two things that you have done that you think are new and different that kind of add to that, what do you think those would be?
I feel like in earlier Space Cowboy, we really pushed like the kind of the combining things together. That was like a really big strong point, because when we started, we're like, well, I really like Drop Dead Gorgeous, and I really like Fear Before the Monster Flames, but I also really like The Locust and Destroy All Operating Systems and The Great Redneck Hope. So like for us, it was like kind of trying to put that all together and like make, like increase it, like be like, okay, we're gonna do it like sassier, like more like dancey parts, like straight up disco beat parts that like people want to dance to. It was like really just a mishmash, and like combining our like sensibilities we had from like liking OG screamo and like other parts, and just like bring it together. And then like currently it's more so with like what we're writing now, we're really trying to again do a mishmash of like the thing that we did in the beginning of Space Cowboy mixed with like the more emotional stuff we did with like Correlations, and be like, okay, like I don't want two eras of Space Cowboy, I want like just one body. So right now we're really trying to push the idea of like the sarcastic, fun, sassiness of like that with like the really overly emotional, melodramatic, soul-crushing depth of like what metalcore can be. And kind of like be like, I like refer to it as like slitting your wrist with a smile, because the idea of like talking about like these really dark issues and things, but also being able to be like, yeah, but like life's absurd, this is kind of funny, dance around, like have a good time while you're suffering, like that kind of thing.
Well, I think to me that's the interesting wrinkle, is that you combine kind of that, I guess I'm going to try to think of the right way to say it that doesn't sound shitty, but I'll just say it, and if people think it sounds shitty, that's fine. But the sort of drop dead gorgeous kind of bands and stuff like that are not, you know, they're not they're not that smart, and you know what I mean, they don't really, as compared to like 3-1-G, like you can say a lot of things about those bands, like the 3-1-G type bands are definitely, a lot of them are very pretentious, like,
oh yeah,
dick face people, but they were very smart and creative and had a really avant-garde kind of point of view. They were trying to push the boundaries, and I'm not putting Drop Dead Gorgeous down in particular or anything like that. I don't actually know anything about them as people, but like that scene, if they did anything avant-garde, it was by accident. It wasn't on purpose, and they were not very self-aware, and like a lot of them were just kind of like dopey Midwest Christian kids, and there's nothing at all wrong with that, but it's very interesting to me that you combine those two kind of scenes that maybe people now don't understand how different they are, but like the 3-1-G bands and the like Drop Dead Gorgeous Alasana kind of scenes have absolutely nothing to do with each other and are like oil and water. Like I wouldn't be surprised if somebody threw shit at you if you went to like a Locust show and you were one of those kids.
I mean, yeah, and that's like the thing that like is like kind of cool about like doing this sound now is we are like weird art kids. Like we did all play in screamo bands before. Like we, you know, when talking about the band, we're talking about like Sawtooth Grin and things like that, not tape ripping off Attack Attack. You know, it's really fun to like combine those things, our past and like our love of like weirder subcultures of music with like a more mainstream thing like Drop Dead Gorgeous. And, cause like, that's the thing is like, even though we play like metalcore and like, yeah, you could say it's probably the most accessible thing I've ever done in my life, we're still all just like weird kids at heart. We're not, you know, I didn't grow up going to metalcore shows. I grew up going to the Che Cafe and like seeing like weird bands and shit and like doing stuff like that. So that's kind of what I feel like is such a, like you said, with Space Cowboys, we're not metalcore kids. We're not all X scene kids. Like we are X like art punk screamo grindcore power violence kids.
I always think it's interesting when people decouple the sound of something from the culture of something. Like all the, you know, I mean, when hardcore bands started copying 90s death metal, for example. And it's always interesting to me because, you know, as I've talked about a million times, like back in the day, like hardcore and death metal didn't have any crossover whatsoever. And now they do, at least sonically. And so, you know, now that seems normal. But the first time anybody breaks those barriers, it is always kind of eye-catching. You're like, oh, I didn't think those two things could go together, but here we are.
Yeah, and I really like shit like that, because even, and this isn't to sound like I'm full of my own shit, but like even when Space Cowboys started, we were very much in like the DIY screamo scene, and the DIY screamo scene did not like metalcore, did not like hardcore. It's very like anti that.
Explain what you mean by that, like OG screamo. For anybody who may not be familiar, explain that.
Things like Codan Armada, Orchid, Page 99, Portraits of Past, like basically like the subgenre of like that's splintered off from emotional hardcore and focused more on like just being extremely emotional while like retaining like the fast aggression of hardcore, but like adding in melodrama.
That stuff like people call scrams.
Yeah, stuff people call scrams. But yeah, like...
And you,
like
you said, probably like, hate that term as much as I do.
Yes, I do. I know who invented it. I know the big men.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But yeah, so they're very like isolated, but when we started getting taken into like the hardcore scene, there was this kind of movement of like kids, you started like being like, oh, you know what? Like Jesus Piece is sick. Like it's okay to like screamo and like be critical in some aspects of hardcore, but still like be in that culture. It's like, okay. And like I said, I don't want to like be like full man shit. That's just what I noticed when like we kind of slid over to like touring almost exclusively with hardcore bands.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that kind of like, I don't want to be pigeonholed in just like one scene or one sound or anything. I want to like exist in both and like every world I can. Because like people will ask me like, do you listen to genres other than heavy music? And I'm like, I listen to mostly music other than heavy music. Heavy music is kind of a small majority of what I listen to. I listen to more trip hop and like indie rock from the early 2000s and like, you know, the alt hip hop scene in the late 90s, early 2000s with like Aesop Rock and shit. Like I mostly listen to stuff outside of this genre of heavy music.
I always think it's funny when people say this, but like they seem to be surprised. I mostly listen to rap. like more than anything else. And people always seem to be surprised by like, oh, you listen to whatever? Like, well, most people listen to more than one genre.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to a bunch of trap all the time. I think that a majority of the time when I hop in a car, I don't put on something with breakdowns. I put on something with like sick trap drums and somebody repetitively saying some shit over it the whole time. But it's hype and I love it and it makes me happy because it's just kind of dumb, but it's in the best way possible.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, I noticed you were retweeting the If I Die First EP and stuff, and it seems like you know some of those people, which makes perfect sense to me. But can you kind of talk a little bit about how you fit in with all that stuff and how you know them?
So I like started meeting all those people because they're all like fans of Space Cowboy. There, a lot of them are ex-metalcore kids. Mm-hmm. Like I've seen Ned's old band, like videos of it. It's very metalcore. I've seen Lotus's old band, very metalcore. So basically they just started reaching out to me and, you know, talking to me and like, cause they're all super nice and super welcoming and supportive and like forthcoming people. Like even like people like as big as Ghostmane will like buy Space Cowboy merch and like are like come to a show and like be a homie, you know? So like all those people are, they just love metalcore and they're not like afraid to like put it out there and they're just all great people. So I just kind of garnered a friendship with them over the last 6 months. That's like become like pretty strong. And I think it shows that like that shit with If I Die First, you know, it's a perfect example. Like, yes, they all love it. And it's been really cool to see that band blow up because I seen that band since its inception because Ned was literally talking to me about the idea at the beginning of quarantine on my couch. We quarantined together for a few days. And he was telling me that idea. And then sure enough, a couple months later or like a couple weeks later, he's sending me these tracks.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it came together that quickly.
Oh, it was beyond fast. He was sending me just like demos, and then mixes and masters and shit. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. And yeah, they made that in such a short amount of time and it's fire. It's really cool to see them break that genre mold, to be like, not afraid to be like, yeah, here's our scene, Seosin project, to like all their SoundCloud rap, you know, crowd.
What's interesting to me about that sort of corner of the scene is, like you said, my experience, I mean, you probably know this, all those people better than I do, but my experience talking to them just on the internet and stuff is that all those people are really nice and friendly and unpretentious and, you know, it kind of reminds me of the same dynamic with the metalcore bands back in the day where everybody hated them and were talking shit on them. But if you ever met them in person, they were all like the nicest kids.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting compared to like, for whatever reason, metalcore has become like the genre full of like, you know, butthole gatekeepers, as seems like this happens with every genre over time. It's like now it's not nice kids in, you know, bands that play at crappy little venues in Dayton. It's a bunch of like 29-year-old dudes with beards that hate everything. And so I really like the fact that there's that corner of the scene where that spirit is still alive of just nice kids making shit that they like.
Yeah, honestly, they're incredibly nice. Like I said, incredibly welcoming. It's really refreshing to kick it with them because I even had the perception before I met them. They're like, oh, they're like SoundCloud rappers, they're pretentious, blah, blah, blah. But they just like literally just like took me by the wrist into their group, you know, like having me like come up to like their studio in Hollywood to like record shit with them and like staying with them and just all the nicest, like friendliest people. Actually, some of the only people who will reach out to me and talk to me and ask me to hang out how I'm doing and shit way more than anybody in the hardcore scene. So I wish there wasn't that perception because they truly are just people who like making music and don't really care about gatekeeping a genre or anything because it's they just do what they want.
Where would you say that you feel the most comfortable as a human hanging out? Like what kind of scene, whether that's music or somewhere else? Like if you were just going to hang out with people, where would you want to be?
I mean, honestly, I'd want to be back up in LA in that studio with them. I've never felt so just like laid back and chill because it was just like, it was for a boyfriend. So it was like Lil Aaron, Smart Death, and Lil Losa's project. And it was just, you know, a room full of like cool producers, them and like friends, like clothing company people coming by, like homie from Trapped Under Ice was there. Like, it was just a really sick hangout. And like, I've never felt just so this like chill and like cool music and art is being made while like just we're all hanging out. It's all low-key and nice, and you know, we went out to a club afterwards and it's just, it was a great time. And I know it's kind of like betraying the hardcore scene, but I love going to hardcore shows and, you know, go to Taco Bell to get vegan shit afterwards. But that kind of just environment was like really nice for me, not worrying about shit, not really talking shit about anyone, no scene drama, just like kick it, just go in the booth and record some stuff and have fun with your friends.
Well, as much as I love hardcore, you know, the scene drama, the tea, if someone needs to do like a hardcore scene tea channel.
Because, like, outside of, like, the call-outs and serious, like, allegations, like, that's one thing. But, like,
I don't mean to laugh that off at all.
Yeah. There's just so much just negativity in the hardcore scene towards people. It's, oh, this person's a bitch. Oh, this band sucks. Oh, like blah, blah, blah. They're just, like, ripping off Kickback. Like, there's a lot of that. And, like, there's, like, a time and a place for antagonism. And there's, like, part of me that, like, when I'm on tour, it's, like, okay, yeah, it's kind of, like, fun to talk shit, whatever, sometimes. But it's just a lot of negativity in that way, and I like just the pure positivity of hanging out with them. But don't get me wrong, I love the hardcore scene. I wouldn't want to not be doing what I do, because I truly love playing shows and meeting people in sick bands and moshing and doing what, and like hurting myself and whatever.
How much contact as a band have you had with just like the straight up metalcore scene that has nothing to do with hardcore?
Very minimal. We've like I'm going to do like metalcore, deathcore, or whatever. Very minimally, because we kind of have stayed away from it. We've definitely done shows where like a promoter won't know like really where we fit in, and they'll throw a bunch of deathcore bands on there. And like, so they're nice people, and like I like talking to them. It's kind of like interesting to get like different perspectives on things, but modern deathcore is not really my thing.
Yeah.
But like with like metalcore, like, I mean, minimally, like I've like met like guitars and Misery Signals and stuff like that, like minimally, because like that like pure metalcore scene I feel like doesn't really exist outside of like the old bands and
stuff
were kind of hard to track down.
I was just curious because I can imagine that scene kind of either really getting it or really not getting it.
It's like 50-50, you know, the people who want to like make Acacia Strain more deathcore don't really like us, but like you know, there are people who like were blissfully like unaware that they're even that scene either died or that it was being revived or anything like that. They just play in those kinds of bands still. Like they love it, and like I love it because they're just stoked kids and they got high energy and
pure, as my wife says.
Yeah, pure. They're just nice kids. They're stoked.
I love him. He's like so pure.
Yeah, they're like 19, 18, like even younger, playing like shit that's just like you don't even know that like this stuff died like years and years and years and years and years ago, but that's cool that you're still doing it. Like I back that.
I can respect that. Another thing that you I think it's you driving this is kind of the visual side of the band too. I know you do some design and illustration kind of work, and I think that's such an important part of music that people really neglect a lot. I always talk about this, like I don't like nu metal, but a lot of these nu metal-y kind of bands kind of forgot how important the look was. And I think that's the same with like metalcore too.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about kind of how you see those things fitting together?
So for me, like I don't do the Art for Space Cowboy anymore. Once we got signed, I kind of like my manager basically just like, Connie, you need to focus on being a singer and stop pulling your hair out over art. But back in the day, like I did do all the Art for Space Cowboy. And I think it's really important. And like, I take this from my dad cause he's like a creative director, graphic designer, but, to be really hands-on with the creation of that, because as much as we say it's about music, it's also equally about how you present yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think there's something that the hardcore scene lacks, is there's not a lot of unity and like look and a lot of thought put into that. But like, it's so important because as much as people are hearing things, they're also seeing you, they see your merch, they see your art, they see your live photos. I mean, their band photos look, they like see that, and that will draw them in. Even if it's subconsciously, that will draw them in. If somebody likes an aesthetic, they will be more tuned to check it out. I think like Static Dress is a great example. That band has a uniform look that is appealing, it's enticing, and as much as their music is amazing, I do think that like their marketing strategy and their dedication to their aesthetic has propelled them forward as well. And I am very jealous because I tried to do that kind of shit in the beginning of Space Cowboy, and I got so much pushback. I'm like, I would edit all of our band photos that were taken, that greenish yellowish tint, and like up the contrast, like kind of like do what they're doing now. And I'd always get like, no, like just black and white, like make it look just like it's a photo. And I'm like, no, like listen to me, like we're gonna, it's an aesthetic, like our EP is gonna be yellow, like trust me on this. And I got so much pushback, so I'm very jealous that they get to do that now, because it looks so cool. And it's important, art and shit's important to me too, because I'm not really a musician. I scream on tracks, I don't play any instruments, I don't really write music outside of lyrics, but art has been my thing my whole life, since I was like in high school doing art for my own bands. It's my career now, it's how I make a living.
Oh, I was gonna ask, I mean, you're definitely good at it. I was gonna ask kind of what your plans are with it on that side of things.
Well, for the last 3 years now, I haven't worked a normal job. I've just been living off doing art for bands. So like art is like my passion. Like the visual look of a band is so important to me. And I'm really excited because I'm going to take Space Cowboy back with our like new album cycle, and be way more hands-on than I had been with Correlations, and like really make it the visual side of it just a uniform thing that stands out and is striking, because yeah, Correlations kind of pissed me off because it wasn't. We were very loose with that album, and I want to change that, because musician I am not, artist I am.
Gravity had a good run, but it's time to feel the weightlessness of the Brooks Glycerin 21. These running shoes feature nitrogen-infused DNA Loft V3 cushioning. Brooks has even magnified the plushness to elevate the softness to new levels. And if you want extra support, find these same features in the Brooks Glycerin GTS 21. Learn more and shop now at brooksrunning.com. That's brooksrunning.com.
Gold One knows that your skin changes all the time. Like waking feeling hydrated, only to have dry skin after a walk on a cold day. Or having dull skin at work, to glowing skin for date night. People don't have one skin, they have skins. And Gold Bond Lotion's clinically proven formulas contain 7 nourishing moisturizers, plus 3 vitamins to help you take care of all of them for all your skins. Gold Bond. Visit goldbond.com to learn more.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too, to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
Have you thought about doing that like for clients other than bands? I mean, it sounds like your dad has a background in that, so you're probably familiar with how that works.
I was gonna, I mean, okay, so before Space Cowboy got signed or first started getting label offers, I was gonna go to college for graphic design. I was literally a couple of weeks away from starting my first semester. Didn't work because label contracts start coming in the email, and it's like, okay, I'm gonna be a musician now. But I would love to branch out. I've done like logos and things for companies, but at the same time, the money would probably be nicer. But I love doing album art and designing vinyl layout and like doing like uniform packaging. Like that's kind of like what I love, because darker usually, and it's kind of more freedom than doing like marketing for a company. Say yeah. They wouldn't want like, you know, deer skulls and like crazy texture work and things
Don't
like
be
that.
So sure.
I mean, maybe if a company came to me and was like, we want you to do this, like get dark, I'd be like, I will design you some dark, stylish stuff, because I also love getting out of my comfort zone.
Yeah. That's
kind of why I like doing album covers as well, because on the same side, like, it's not my ideas, it's not my art. Like, bands come to me with a theme or whatever they want, and I have to convey that. And like, that's what I like about it, because it pushes me to do stuff that I would never do on my own. Because I have to take this band's idea or this band's theme and or whatever symbolism and make something out of that. And it's kind of like, it's like art with a prompt,
yep.
Which is nice, because sometimes you get stale when you're just going off your brain without like stimulation out from an outside source.
I think the move is to do, do you know Ryan Clark from Demon Hunter? Are you familiar with his work?
Mm-mm.
He's a really, really good graphic designer. He was the art director for Tooth and Nail for like 12 years or something like that, so you've seen tons of his work.
Mm-hmm.
And he does all the Demon Hunter stuff too. He also, I don't know if he still is part of it, but he had an agency for a while, might be still part of it, called Invisible Creature, that did stuff for like Amazon and Target and Microsoft and stuff like that. And it's all, and they do great work for those clients. And it's all based on kind of his portfolio from the music world, where, you know, I'm sure he got paid okay at Tooth and Nail, but not like working for Amazon.
Yeah.
So I think that's the move, is like, you know, use that stuff as the way to build your portfolio. And then people will come to you and say, we just want you to do what you do.
Yeah. Well, that's like kind of like been my plan, because as much as the band's growing, that's cool. I've been trying to grow my clientele and my art around it to the point, like, I know it's like a long shot dream, but like be like a Jacob Bannon type thing of like,
I don't think that's a long shot dream at all.
Well, thank you. Or like the dude from Page 99, like Art Iconic, you know their shit from like, but, and you also love their band.
Mm-hmm.
Build these things together and kind of like a multi-task career kind of thing,
yeah.
You know, do music, do art, two things I love. Try to succeed in both those.
I mean, I think the hardest part for the vast majority of like visual artists is just getting people to know who the fuck you are. And a band is a great way to do that.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I got my first clientele, was because I did art for my first screamo band when I was in high school, and people liked it and they started asking me to do art for them in like that style. And it kind of just like snowballed from there to where I'm at now. It's literally because I drew something for my own band's cover and then started this whole thing.
I would not be surprised at all if you get hit up by, you know, fucking Toyota or something like that, because one of the things about hardcore that's cool is that there's a lot of hardcore people like my age who are now in, you know, relatively powerful positions inside a lot of big companies. Mm-hmm. And they want to work with people like you. They don't want to work with some like boring ass, you know, agency that does cornflakes boxes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like sometimes they have to work with those agencies, but they would way rather work with you. It's just, you know, it's just the time just has to align where those two things come together. And then, you know, I bet you'll do one project for Toyota or something once. It'll put you on the map. And then after that, everyone else will call you. It's always like that first thing that gets a snowball rolling. That's like the hardest one. You have a cool style that not that many people do now. It's kind of that collage-y, like, it definitely has like a mid-2000s kind of vibe to me, but updated, you know, because the stuff that's straight out of the mid-2000s looks a little bit dated now.
So I like to go back to those album covers and look at them, like really be like, okay, like how is this done? And like see like, you know, what can be done better in like modern times? Like see like, did they get rid of like the black line probably around this thing or right. Whatever it may be. It's like really interesting. But like, yeah, I mean, I would love to do that. Like, because it would be nice to like branch out, and it would be nice to kind of like, I don't really think music will ever completely pay my bills and make me be able to live a comfortable life. So like having that thing on the side as well is like really nice, two different things. Cause like, I don't know if it's weird, but I don't want to just be known as like Connie, like from See You Space Cowboy, like the singer. I just want to be like, okay, Connie like does art and sings and does all this other shit and writes, like, cause I also write.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be like a full creative force. I don't know why I would just stick to one medium.
I don't see any reason why you can't make it happen. Well, I wanted to ask you a couple other questions, if you don't mind. I'm curious about, I don't know if you saw the video I made a couple weeks ago about racism in metal.
I watched the beginning, but I didn't get to get all the way through it.
Well, you get the idea. And I called it racism in metal specifically because, in my opinion and experience, I think the metal scene in particular is more ignorant than, say, hardcore or pop punk or something else like that. But as I said in that video, you know, I'm an old cis white guy, so, you know, obviously I'm not going to be on the receiving end of it. I'm curious if what are your thoughts on that as far as like hardcore in particular, not just racism, but just any kind of like ignorant shit.
I mean, I can't speak much to racism. I haven't really seen it aside from like band members being mad dumb and dropping racist terms and getting called out for them.
Yeah.
But in terms of like transphobia and things, like I don't experience that so much in the hardcore scene per se. I've always been really accepting and things like that. Like in the metal scene, definitely. I can kind of like look at the people who like say shit about me, and like I'm like, yeah, I can tell that like you are not in the hardcore scene, that you are very much like metal scene. But like, yeah, specifically in the hardcore scene, I haven't really experienced problems. Everybody is really nice, inclusive, understanding, and I love it because I was a little worried pre-joining the scene, like how would this be like taken? And it's always been great. You know, nobody even treats me like different than like anything but like a girl and just like one of the homies.
Well, I'm happy to hear that because that's kind of what I thought was the case. But, you know, again, obviously I wouldn't know firsthand, but, you know, and people like tell me like, oh, hardcore is just as bad as metal. I'm like, dude, if you go to a hardcore show and say something like racist, especially if it's non-ironic at all, like you might get killed. Like you literally might get killed.
I mean, that's like the thing is, yeah, hardcore very much has like a no tolerance policy for that thing. And that's kind of what I like about it too, because, you know, in other scenes and maybe not as accepted to like, you know, do whatever you need to like stand up for yourself. But like in hardcore, I know that like if anybody ever did say something, you know, blatantly transphobic to my face, like nobody at that venue have a problem with me swinging on them. And like, I don't have a problem because I've done it before. In my lifetime, you know, I've been in, you know, many fights because of like people just saying like homophobic or like transphobic shit. I kind of like that about the hardcore scene is they're willing to like take a zero stance policy on like this kind of shit and like are down for like minorities to do whatever to defend themselves and also people to like, you know, teach people a lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm happy to hear that. And I think I never knew a single trans person in my life, or at least nobody that was like, I mean, I probably did, but they weren't out because, you know, years ago it was a lot less acceptable than it is now, I think. And since maybe 2012 or 13 or so, I've gotten to know probably a couple dozen trans people through like the hardcore scene and stuff. And I think it's very interesting because A, there's a lot more trans people than I would have ever guessed. Like I remember when I was a kid, maybe not a kid, it was like the late 90s. I saw a documentary on like A&E or something about a boy who, you know, he was born a boy and became a trans woman. And it was a documentary about him as though this was like a one in a million kind of thing that like was totally unheard of. And that's what I thought it was. And then years later, I'm like, wow, I'm actually meeting a lot of trans people. I guess this isn't that rare as I thought is interesting. And so I wonder, do you think that there's more trans people like in the hardcore scene than the rest of the population, or is that just reflective of where we're at in general, or what do you think about that?
I think it's just reflective of where we're at because I do know a lot of trans people in the hardcore scene, and that kind of like, you know, that bond that forms without really having to say anything. But outside of hardcore, I know that like, you know, the cartoon and like artsy scene, like DeviantArt page has a lot, like more than this. I mean, hardcore has a lot because it's a very accepting place and things like that. So it's easier to come out and like be loud and proud. But I definitely think it speaks more to like just the times in general. As there's been more focus on like trans people and like more representation things. Cause like I have people tell me all the time and it warms my heart that like I was part of the reason why they felt like they could come out So as we get more representation and we're talking about it more, more and more people will feel comfortable coming out, and they'll also be even educated on it. Because me, I didn't know what trans person really was until I was like 14. I had no idea. And like that kind of put the light bulb in my head of like what I had been dealing with my whole life. I'm like, oh, you know, got me thinking. But I didn't know what it was till I like, saw like Laura Jane Grace had come out, you know.
And that was like, what, 2011 or something like that?
Yeah. And then like I like heard about it, but I didn't like really look into it until like that time. And then at the same time, I went to the Che Cafe and, you know, very like anarchist vegan safe space. I like learned so much there that like changed my life. And I feel like the reason you didn't see a lot of trans people out before is also just a lack of education. People didn't know what it was. People still don't really know what it is. But I think, yeah, I definitely attribute the increase in trans women people living their life openly to that. Just the changing of the times. That's how things work. It's like the same thing with like, you know, gay movements in San Francisco, people, you know, becoming more vocal and fighting for rights and, you know, rioting and being like, we're here, we're queer, we have the Castro now.
Well, I really do think that music has made a big difference in terms of representation and just making people aware of everything you just said. Like, I remember, you know, Laura Jane Grace and Mina Caputo from Life of Agony, and both of those to me were like, oh wow, this is unexpected, because at the time that was definitely a lot less, you know, I don't know if common is the right word, but that, you know, that didn't happen that much back then. And the other thing that I noticed is that the trans activists that I see on TV are very different from the trans people that I know personally. Like, the ones on TV tend to be really like loud and angry, and not to say that they don't have some valid reasons to be, but I think a lot of people are kind of scared of trans people in a way, because they just see these ones on TV and they're like, oh my gosh, this person is very intense. The trans people that I know, I would say, are actually probably more chill than average.
Yeah, it's kind of that, like, and this weird dichotomy has existed in so many movements before. Like, you could like trace it back to even like civil rights and things like that, or like Black Panthers.
That's true.
When you have to be vocal, and you have to sometimes be violent to prompt revolution and change. Like, yes, it's possible, but people don't realize on the same side of the table that they're just fighting for like rights or whatever, and that underneath that, there is, even the people who are angry and violent, even when I'm, you know, yelling at someone or doing whatever, like underneath, like I just want to like exist, like that's it. And the rest of the community does, and not everyone's willing to raise their voice and be violent or whatever. So some just want to like live in peace and harmony, and that's like honestly the whole point of the movement is just that. But it does scare people off to an extent. Unless you're somebody who, like you said, like understands that like this is a fight, because like, you know, basically our existence is being called into question, kind of thing, or we're being oppressed or whatever.
And there is like actual life threatening violence that could happen to you just walking down the street.
Oh yeah, like I said, I've had to fight people. I mean, lucky for me, I trained in boxing and MMA, and I for some reason had. I'm very strong, so like
you look pretty athletic.
Yeah, I've never really had a problem beating the shit out of somebody who steps up to me, but like, yeah, there are like trans women get assaulted, trans women get killed, like it is like dangerous, and like even like being refused medical care because you're trans, or for not even just for like, you know, trans related things, but just in general. I know there's a case right now of like a Catholic hospital turning down treatment on a trans man because they said it's against their religious belief. And so it is a dangerous world of it. And that is why people are so vocal and so adamant about change. And the way that we go about it resonates with some and doesn't with others. It's like the same thing with like people with the recent Black Lives Matter movement. Some people understand that like these protests are necessary to bring about change, and other people just be like, oh, there's looting and like, fuck it. Like, they suck, you know?
Well, I mean, they had a good point. As much as, you know, I don't like seeing destruction and violence and stuff any more than anyone else, but it is a good point. It's like, well, yeah, but you yelled at us when we tried to kneel at a football game. You told us to shut up, and it's like, well, what are we supposed to do?
I mean, that's the thing, is like, there have been so many means throughout history, a long history of people trying to use peaceful methods to, like, you know, say, hey, pay attention, this shit's fucked up. And then sometimes you do need to march through the street and throw a brick through the window. So you need to let your voice be heard through like a mass number of people. And it's just, I don't like when people look at it as just like, this is just violence destruction, because this is like, this is just an emotional response to the violence that you have put on these people forever, you know, whatever group it may be, Black Lives Matter, you know, people of color, queer people, whatever it may be, women. It is a reaction to what has happened to us. And so I don't know why people are surprised or want to like be like, oh, how, why is this happening? Like, this is so terrible. It's like, you know, our lives have been terrible. Like, our history has been terrible. And like, you still won't listen and make a change. So like, we're going to scream in your face about it and make it sure you know that we, like, we mean business.
Well, I know you're pretty vocal about this stuff. To what extent do you feel like you have to be vocal about it, or do you want to be, or like, how do you see your role there?
Part of what I promised myself when Space Cowboy started, when we started getting traction, I said, if we ever got a bigger platform, I would always use it for my beliefs and things like that. So it's very important for me. It's very important even like to still do. I still make speeches at shows. You know, I still say, especially like when I'm, you know, playing to like crowds of people who might not be exposed to this or whatever, not hardcore crowds, I think it's really important to like let people know that like, this is what this band stands for. And like, if you don't like it, sorry, like maybe just like separate art from artists or do whatever the fuck you want. But like, this is what we stand for. And like, this is what I'm going to talk about. Like the entire early history of Space Cowboy, every song is political. Before Correlations, I never wrote an emotional song about my feelings. It was all politics. And like nowadays it's a little bit, you know, I still write about politics, but I also write about other stuff, but I still feel it's extremely important to push that. Because as much as there is merit to just, you know, catharsis and your feelings, I think it's if an artist has beliefs and like, you know, believes and like stands in like solidarity with like the oppressed people, like I don't know why you wouldn't use your platform to speak about it, because that's what we need. We need people in positions of like quote unquote power to talk about these things, because they have influence and they can influence more and more kids and get more of a message out there.
Well, with that in mind, what made you kind of go towards more emotional topics?
So I went towards more emotional topics because with around the time that we went to record Correlations, we had written it as a more dramatic record and things. So it's kind of in my head thinking about like, maybe I'll branch out a little bit, but when it came time to like record, like Natalie's suicide really sent me down like an insane spiral of like just darkest time in my life. I became like a terrible alcoholic. I was like getting blackout drunk every night. I was doing any drug I could get my hands on. So when it came time to write the lyrics, I was sitting in the studio, you know, drunk or high already. And I was just like, you know what, like, I need to write about something other than politics right now. I need to like write about like what is going on. And I need to like let people know that like there's like hope in the world. Because like even beyond just writing my feelings, this is the first time I've ever written songs that like have like helpful like messages and then like telling people not to give up. Like that kind of thing that I used to think was really corny, but I'm just like in this moment where like I'm like on the like the razor's edge of like death and being alive and like trying to record an album. It just felt like this was the most important thing to put out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, recording that record was like 2.5 weeks of hell for me. It was like the hardest thing I've ever done. This is something that had to be done. It's nice to like look back, because I'm like not really in that era of my life anymore, but to look back and be like, that was the like most painful time of my life, but I made it out and I'm okay now.
Well, I think there's a big difference between writing a song that's kind of helping somebody get through something that you are going through, you know, in the moment, because that's kind of all you can think about or say right now, versus all those, you know, 2012 Savior Core bands that just wrote it because they knew it would sound cool on a t-shirt and they're, you know, gullible. And I'm not putting their fans down. Their fans are like actual children. They just literally don't know any better. Their fans would eat it up because they're, you know, children. It's unfortunate to me that those bands kind of put a bad taste in so many people's mouths for that topic, because it really is helpful. I mean, music is a powerful thing. And I think a lot of people could point to a song that helped them get through some difficult time. And it's unfortunate that anyone would have to be like, yeah, well, I don't know if I want to do that because this asshole in this shitty risecore band did it and it was corny.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the thing is like, I honestly, at the time, I didn't even give thought to it. You know, when I'm writing an album like that, that's from such an emotional place. I didn't really even give thought to what I was writing. It was just write. Partially because I was also in the studio having to write lyrics right before I record because, like I said, I was a complete alcoholic and drug addict and just out of my mind. Didn't really even know like what day it was. So I didn't even like think about what I was writing. It was just this is what I'm writing. So like, you know, some songs are like political because that's what I'm thinking about. Some songs are talking about like, you know, toxic relationships or like suicidal ideation. And then some of them just turned into like, you know what, like, let me write about someone else's experience that like I've been through as well. And like, let me like tell you like, this is how it is, but like, don't fret, like fight, do something.
You know, as much as I don't want to say that this might be true, because it has a lot of bad implications, or potentially bad implications, I think that a lot of times the best art is made when you are in that kind of pain. And it's true that a lot of times you see this with lots of bands when they become successful and they get sober and happy relationships, their music starts to suck. And I mean, I would never obviously want anybody to like deliberately make their life hard to make better music. Like, I would never want that. But does that scare you at all?
It scares me a little bit, but like, because like, yeah, my art has always been suffering fuel. It's always been like, you know, there's always my, even though like I'm better now, my head's still always in like really dark places. My life is still like, you know, I'm always juggling with like the existential nature of my existence, shit like that. So I'll never like, I'm not really worried about that because I always have something to draw from. But I do think there is something to be said about like, yeah, like we make music because it's cathartic. And what, when are you going to get the most gratifying sense of catharsis? When you're in a terrible time in life. Mm-hmm. What hardcore and metalcore is it's me screaming out my problems in a kid's face while they're screaming back at me. You know, it's yes. This like bond, this like this primal thing. So suffering is a important part about that. And so it would make sense that, yeah, you know, once you don't have that fuel anymore, maybe this isn't your genre anymore. Maybe you go make like a you know, more lighthearted, like poppy thing. Like if I wasn't like, you know, in like misery 24/7, that's probably what I would make. I'd make happy dance music because it's fun.
Well, all I ask is that you don't put out some really corny acoustic song about getting sober that you think is really meaningful, that everyone else is like, look, I'm really glad you're sober, but this is a mistake.
No.
We don't want this.
I will not do that because I'm definitely not sober and I'm definitely still going through tons of shit. It's just, it's like that thing of like where it's not critical mass anymore. It's not like, okay, like Connie, like we might need to like lock me in a psychiatric hospital. Now it's just like, okay, like this is like normal things to deal with. It's just like, this is mid-20s life. But no, I think I'll always be able to pull from that. Because even like with the new album, like I'm thinking about like what to write and things, and yeah, I'm not as in this crazy dark place like I was before, but I decided like, you know what, I'm going to write about the process that it took me to get back to like here, like to regain my sanity and things like that. Kind of like, you know, the album's called Correlation Between Entrance and Exit Wounds. I'm kind of looking at like that crazy dark time, that was the entrance wound, and now I'm going to write about the exit wound, like the actual process I went to like heal, to grieve properly, to like not be as dependent on drugs and alcohol, to not be, you know, not try to commit suicide anymore, like to like be a person again that functions fairly well.
Well, I guess it's a good problem to have if you're like, well, I'm not miserable anymore. How is it going to affect my lyrics? You know, I guess that's not a bad place to be.
No, it's not. It's, I'll take it because yeah. If anything for me, it gives me a new interesting point of view to like write from. Like now I'm like looking back and at what was. I still retain some of those feelings, but I'm more clear headed to truly like analyze what was going on in that at that point in my life, that kind of thing, which is almost more interesting to me than just the pure primal catharsis I got from doing that. Because I like to analyze things. I love analyzing themes in movies and like why people write what they write and like why art is like it is. So it's almost more interesting to me to like do this now and like analyze myself and be like, what the hell is going on with me?
You know, I think I'm pretty good at doing that with music. I'm so bad at doing it with movies. Like, I'll watch some movie and I'll be like, that was the stupidest movie I've ever seen. Like, it was so boring. Like, don't you know that like, his dad was supposed to be Jesus, and this, you know, when his mom died, it was this. And I'm like, oh yeah, no, that didn't occur to me at all. And they're like, really? It's the most obvious thing ever. I don't know why. Just with music, with movies, my brain just interprets everything totally literally.
I spend most of my time on YouTube watching like theme analysis and breakdowns and things like that of movies. I love that. I love
watching them. I just can't think of them.
I'm also like, because I'm not a huge fan of like rom-coms and comedies and shit like that, like other people are. Like I liked them when I was like growing up, but like to me now, it's like I've become way too egotistical to be like, I like Adam Sandler movies other than Uncut Gems. So like for me, as part of being like a really stuck up egotistical art kid, it's like I'm almost like duty bound to just like analyze the hell out of boring movies. Uh-huh. And to be like, no, I love this like dialogue that really has no point. It really exemplifies like the wanderingness of like our brains, and just like the lack of substance shows like our echoes our meaningless existence, or how we're born with no purpose. Like it's just like I said, I'm big duty bound to like do that kind of shit as like the pretentious art kid.
Well, I will leave that to you, and I will also let you get on with your day because we got about an hour in the can here, which is pretty good. Is there anything, any words of wisdom or anything else you want to mention before I let you go?
Make art, because I'm tired of kids asking me how to do this or how to like be successful.
Do it. That's how you do it.
Like, yeah, just do it. Like, fucking, I don't know how to do shit. I've just been playing in like shitty bands since I was 15. Like, didn't plan anything. There's no plan to get big. There's no plan to have an impact. You just do it. And if it resonates, it resonates. And have fun while you do it. Do it for a reason.
Love it. Cool. Well, where can people find you on the internet if they're interested in what you have to say?
I might mainly use Instagram. It's at xcamulovechildx, and Camu is spelled C-A-M-U-S. And then Twitter, I think, is just camulovechild. And then you can follow my band, Sea Space Cowboy, too.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for making time for this, and hope to catch you next time you come through Seattle.
Yeah, I would love to hang out again.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home thinking about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.